Hi, listeners. Jason here. You may have already heard that the International Standard for Psychological Health and Safety at Work, ISO 45003-2021, has now been released. We are thrilled that we finally have a globally agreed best practice manual for how workplace mental health should be done, and that the focus is on risk management and not fruit bowls and yoga. To help fast-track your understanding and adoption of the standard, Joelle and myself have been working hard on a free online training course. The ISO 45003 Foundations course features an hour of video content, which will take you through the plan, do, check, and act phases of the standard. The training is now live at www.45003.org. Please register and share with your network. On behalf of Joelle and myself, we hope that you'll find it really beneficial, and this helps you to prevent psychological injuries and improve worker wellbeing in your workplace. And did I mention it was free? Now, on to this episode.
From Flourish DX, this is the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. With workplace mental health becoming a safety prerogative, this is the source of information on psychological injury prevention and health promotion.
Hi, and welcome to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. My name is Jason Van Shee, and I'm one of the hosts of the show. The aim of the podcast is to rapidly increase the knowledge and application of psychological health and safety in workplaces worldwide. To help with this, we have regular guests from around the world who are leading the way in this important area. But before I introduce our guest and topic for today, allow me to introduce my co-host, Joelle Mitchell. How are you today, Joelle?
I'm feeling good, Jason. I'm vaccinated.
Oh, well done. Yeah, yes. Shot number two now, right?
Shot number two, yep. Had a couple of fairly dodgy days afterwards, but I'm feeling good now, so.
Yep, so I've noticed my 5G reception has improved.
Well, that's it. I'm a walking 5G emitter now, so yay, free internet for everybody.
Yeah, excellent. Terrific. So yeah, you're feeling good. I know you had a couple of days where you, like you said, you weren't feeling
yeah
worse.
It was a couple of days of feeling fairly terrible, but yeah, after that, all good. So yeah, no long-lasting side effects
yet.
Indeed, thank you for that.
Yeah, get a jab, everyone. Yeah, no, I'll be getting mine soon. Yeah,
just as soon as those Qantas points get linked to it.
That's right. Now, I was saying to Joelle earlier off air that I hear there's going to be more and more incentives given to people the longer that you hold out for the vaccine. So I'm just waiting until the rewards meet the the standard, the threshold.
Terrible.
We will see. We will see. But look, let's introduce our guest for today. Hey?
Yes.
Okay. She's actually the first occupational health nurse to appear on this podcast and the second guest from across the ditch. She's super experienced with almost 20 years working in occupational health with a range of large and complex organizations. Welcome to the podcast, Carolyn Habidal.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here.
Glad to be here, beaming in from New Zealand. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you're sitting up on your couch at the moment, I believe.
No, I've moved back into the lounge and into my office because I've got a box under my desk that I've got my foot up on.
So you've just had an operation on your
ankle. Surgery on my ankle. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, I used to play quite a bit of sport, and all those sporting injuries are coming back to haunt me as I get a little bit older, unfortunately. So I've been patched up and just going through this painful period and plaster to get that repaired properly. So no weight bearing. And so I'm hopping around and I've got this little knee trolley that I'm scooting around on. So that's been a savior, I can tell you. But yeah, it's interesting that I'm very glad that I work from home, that I've kept myself very occupied. Otherwise it would be a very mentally challenging task to be sitting here with not much to do, just keep your leg up. So, yeah.
Lucky everyone's used to working from home right now, and so it wasn't a big transition, right, for you to be able to work from home.
I've actually been working from home since February last year. So,
You're doing it before it was cool.
Sorry.
You're doing it before it was cool.
Oh yes. Well, no, that we shut our office back in February. It's opened, but yeah, I moved back to New Zealand where my family was in September last year, so carried on working from home in Melbourne, unfortunately, is opening and shutting, so I think I made a good choice for now.
Very good choice, yeah.
Definitely. This is certainly making me feel good about my decisions as an adolescent and young adult to avoid most types of sport-based or team-based sports. So, feeling good about those decisions now.
It was fun at the time.
All right, Carolyn, can you tell us about your favourite podcasts? What do you like to listen to?
Well, that's a pretty tricky question, Joel. I'm actually not. I actually do listen to these Flourish ones, funnily enough. I do watch those, but I'm actually not a huge podcast. It's something that's kind of a little bit new to me, I guess. I haven't really been that into it. So I've been starting to get into the LinkedIn world. And so, I have noticed your podcast, actually. So funnily enough, you've got me on here. So. But other than that, I'm afraid I'm not much of a podcaster.
That's right. This is the only one you really need to listen to.
That's right. That's right.
Everything that you need right here. All right. Well, can you tell us about your professional career then?
My professional career, gosh. So I left school and I went straight into nursing. I qualified as a registered nurse, and I've done many nursing roles. So I worked as I've been a charge nurse, I've been a district nurse out in the community, I've been a theatre nurse, I've done all sorts of nursing. And then it's not the greatest story, but my story was that they were advertising for an occupational health nurse at the dairy factory, which was just down the road from where I lived. And it sounded very appealing to me because it was no shift work and Monday to Friday. And to be honest with you, I didn't actually even know, my question was, what does a nurse do at the factory? So yeah, that's how much I knew about occupational health. 20 years later, I'm still an occupational health nurse. I'm very proud to say that. And I have worked in oil and gas, now in mining, and then, as I said, I did those first years breaking my learning, and I did a diploma in occupational health. So did my nursing degree and then have an occupational health diploma on top of that, and many other learnings along the way, but psychology of the workplace has been something that I have been completely fascinated with, particularly when we're doing rehabilitation and those sort of things, bringing people back to work and how good work is just so important for people, and having that right environment is critical. So love my work, and I'm very happy to say that I do love my work. It's but it's not a well understood profession. Just these last few weeks, I was in hospital and talking to some of the nurses in the ward, and they were like, "Oh, that job sounds boring." And it's like, this is the least boring job that you will possibly ever have. So there's so many variables, and I think the title of occupational health nurse is, there's so many businesses that want many different things from a nurse or an advisor. And my role really has been in the advisory role for the last, quite a number of years. So it's a little bit different from being on the ground and doing hearing tests and things. It's more in that, into advising the business what they should be looking at and what they need to do to be in this space.
And that's a really important function, I think, for a range of different professions, is to not just be sort of at the front level actually implementing things, but being in a position to inform policy decisions for the organisation. So you're actually having sort of evidence-informed policy across the organisation. I think that's a really vital role.
Well, I think a lot of businesses see the role as a bit of a nice to do. They see safety as important because legislatively that health is often the things you can't see. So if we can't see it, then maybe we don't need that. Or understanding the, you know, what the professional role can bring to business, I think is quite critical. Whereas, yeah, we're often seen as, it's just a nice to have, not the importance of it.
Yeah, and we can say the same for psych health and safety as well.
Yeah, but increasingly it's going to be legislated.
Yeah, so.
That's right. And I guess that's you know, these sort of things, talking about mental health, we were talking about mental health and business, you know, since I started in occupational health. And you know, we're just really not made a lot of progress, or some managers get it. And some managers don't, unfortunately, and it's helping guide along the way. And so I really think that this piece of legislation is fantastic.
Mm, yeah, hopefully they don't take too long to draft it. But Carolyn, I'm actually interested in how you define the role of an occupational health nurse. I mean, we often have to talk about what a organisational occupational psychologist does and how it differs from, say, even clinical psychology. So how does an occupational health nurse differ from, say, a registered nurse working in a hospital or, you know, primary care kind of area?
I think it's, from a very overview, I guess, because there is many, many variances in what a business does, but if we are in business to be helping with health strategies, that's one part where we can be setting the strategies and writing the guidelines and standards, which is basically what I do a lot in my role now as an advisor. And then there's the nursing roles, which is, I mean, I see these roles as the ultimate job in health prevention. So everything from health on work. So what does the business actually need to do to control the hazard, and how do we support that? And then there's the wellness factor, so thinking about public health and how the person comes to work. So what you need to do to be healthy to come to work, what health does, and how we manage those risks within the workplace, you know, fatigue is an example, or drugs and alcohol, all of those things is around how your health is managed. And then there's the strategic side of things, or setting the standards so that it's quite clear for business. So there's many variances, but some businesses see the OC Health nurse role as the legislative part. So for example, it's a requirement to have annual audiometry if you are exposed to over 85 decibels of noise. And so they just bring a nurse in to manage that compliance. But we're starting to talk more about the culture of health and how the culture of health, when you manage all of those things from a work on health and a health at work and a strategic business point of view, and have all of those three things combined together, that's where you're looking at a culture of health. And so, yeah, when we're talking about what does an OC Health nurse role do, you know, there's the minor part, there's the compliance, and there's the businesses like the Shells and Newcrest and those type of multinational businesses that see that culture of health as a really important role to really help and support their workforce. Because if you've ever been in a job that you don't like, we don't like the manager or something like that, it makes for a pretty miserable workplace. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Hopefully Joelle doesn't feel that way.
It comes and goes.
So you mentioned Shell and Newcrest. Obviously you worked for, was it 11 years with Shell? Yeah. You've been at Shell at Newcrest now for a number of years. So tell us a bit about, tell us about Newcrest, first of all, you know, what they do for people who aren't familiar with the business, and then, you know, what your key activities are within the business.
Yeah, so Newcrest is a gold and copper mining business, and we have operations basically New South Wales, Western Australia, Canada, BA, and over in Papua New Guinea. So about a 10,000 plus workforce. Plus we have mining exploration going on all over the world, which you know, that's they're you know, that sort of looking for that where the next minefield is important for the growth of the business. So there's a lot, and I guess, you know, in my role, understanding what business does as an occupational health nurse is really important as well, to get you know, so that you know what, understand the business so that you can do your job well. So thinking about my role has been with Newcrest has been at the level where I've been in the corporate role. So within the corporate, we develop the standards. So then the sites have the opportunity to take that standard, develop their plans, and then we're supporting them through that plan development and to get them to that standard. So ensure that they're meeting the standards, and if that's where we bring legislation into, you know, wherever applicable, et cetera, that, you know, we have, you know, the importance of keeping that that level of what our expectation is for all of those sites. And then they need to meet their local legislation and writing their plans to the local legislation of where they are as well. And then we have a governance role that then we audit them, audit each of the sites to see how they're functioning and where their gaps are. And then again, it's kind of a support role, but it's also setting the standard so that it it makes it very clear what each of those businesses need to do.
Yeah, no, very interesting work, like you say, and being able to have that say at the top level, or the input at the top level. And then so interesting being able to work across cultures, right? Because Newcrest is located like right around the world with their mining operations.
Yeah. Yep. So when it comes to awareness and, you know, in training, have we got, you know, all languages are being thought about, and of course the different cultures. So, you know, what we do in Papua New Guinea, not necessarily is what happens in Western Australia, you know, but there's still a minimum standard of what is expected to be met.
Yeah, no, very interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
So let's talk about the psychosocial hazards then. So what are some of the key psychosocial hazards that are relevant for the Newcrest workforce?
So, you know, mining is never in luxurious places typically a long way away from anything, and so, you know, those being away from home, some people, you know, and particularly through this COVID space, has really been you know, I don't even know how to describe it really for what some people have gone through. It's been quite incredible, and I'll just say hats off to the guys and girls in our business anyway that have shown such remarkable resilience. It's just it blows my mind how incredible it has really been, how people have stuck together and really supported each other. Some people have been away from home for, you know, 6 to 8 months, so it's a long time to be away from family. So, you know, you could be in the army. it's a big deployment, and it's a big ask. And you know, to do those sort of things when normally your normal rotation is month on, month off, or 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, or 8 and 6, or whatever the roster is. And so it's quite, you know, there's been a lot of changes over the last few years, and I guess that's had, you know, quite a big impact on how our workforce have had to really pull together and work together. So we'll say, from my point of view, I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about mining and psychological hazards and all the rest of it, and absolutely it's all there. But I think I've met in my few years in mining and then, you know, working in oil and gas as well, in offshore platforms and thing, you know, out in the middle of the ocean, and I've met some of the most resilient people. So it's about the environment that they pull together and working together. And I guess if you don't fit in, you don't fit in. And It's not the place for you if you're not got that cohesive team, and being in that real team environment is critical for these type of environments to work in. And that's what we really work on, you know, making sure that, you know, people have a really good understanding of fatigue and connectivity to home, you know, all those sort of things, because they can be really challenging in the environments that we are as well. And the simple things, you know, going back to the hierarchy of needs where, you know, the food is good, you've got a comfortable bed, and that it's air conditioned if you're somewhere, you know, excessively hot, or that it's warm if you're somewhere like in Canada where it's freezing, you know, those sort of things. So going back to basics and making sure that those things are really well managed to start with. And then we start talking about more around in that awareness space to illness, et cetera, and managing those anxieties and depression type illnesses. But being proactive is something that in Newcrest that I have been, you know, particularly passionate about. We have done a lot in this space, you know, and I see a lot of businesses doing a lot in the space of the reactive. We have EAP support, and I'm never going to say that we don't have that. We need that. That's absolutely important. But we need to start talking more in the proactive space and how we prevent these things from happening. And that, you know, and then sometimes that's about coming back to the basic needs and understanding those risks and making sure that if you're going to go into a role you know, where you're 2 hours away from home, that's your flight, or you're a day away from home and you're in another country because you're flying in and flying out to another country, you know, what's your backup plan? What, you know, coping mechanisms do you have to actually be able to manage those things if things go wrong at home and those sort of things? So it's really important how we manage those things. Can't say we always get it right, but it's, yeah.
So you've covered really a lot of different elements there. And I think, you know, a lot of what you talked about there can actually be tied back quite closely to a range of sort of organizational systems and structures. And I think that's really important. You know, it's not just about the individual and their sort of personal characteristics that make them a good fit for the job, but it's also about the structures within the organization that support that. And like, I've been at, you know, at mine sites where there's no mobile phone reception and there's just, you know, 5 landline telephones, and you get a 20-minute slot and then your phone disconnects for the next person to come along, and then, you know, and those sorts of things. And yeah, I mean, food, if you've got a good chef versus a bad chef, it makes all the difference to morale on site. I think a lot of the points that you made there were sort of got me thinking really about the recruitment and onboarding processes and how you sort of build in consideration of those unique psych hazards that are specific to FIFO work. How do you have a role in sort of interacting with human resources in that recruiting and onboarding process?
So some of it's about looking at understanding the fitness to work requirements, and but also just on that, Jolene, it's around actually taking the people to site so they've actually been there and understand, and before they sign a contract. I think that's a really important piece that our HR team do, that, you know, so that you can really visualise how this is going to work. I think that's really important. But yes, from a fitness to work point of view, we overview the medicals as well. So we want to know that if somebody has had a history, that we understand that and we understand how we can support that person in the best way we can. It's not about discriminating that they can't be in a role. That's definitely not what it's about. I see my job as about getting people into work, because we know that work is good for people and it's good for your health. So it's not about, you know, people shouldn't be hiding if they've had a previous history of an illness, etc. That's the last thing that we want to know. We want to know how we support you and how we keep you in a role, and what your needs are. And if we need to adapt to that, then that's what we should be doing.
That's really good to hear, and probably quite refreshing for a lot of our listeners to hear, because I think, you know, the experience for a lot of people who have had a mental illness in the past is that there is a lot of stigma in that recruiting process and sort of...
Absolutely, and people they really worry about whether that's going to stop them from getting a job. So, and I say we... You know, just like a physical injury, if we know about that and we know how you manage that, then that's got to be better than us not knowing about it and then things falling over and then, you know, it becomes a crisis situation. Nobody needs that. You don't need that as a worker. We don't need it as a business. So let's work together on an understanding how you really get on and make the workplace a good place to be in. Yeah.
So is that approach something that Newcrest is sort of sharing or promoting at an industry level, sort of through your sort of industry representative groups and that sort of thing?
Yeah, so I guess we're involved with different industry groups. Are we sharing everything that we do? Possibly not as much as we could. You know, a lot of these things are things that we've been really working on over the last couple of years. And, you know, and our business completely understanding that change in the way that we manage that as well. So, you know, we look at that whole mental health piece in sort of five different areas where we have, you know, we've got the risk assessment part so that we're completely understanding each site's individual risk factors. Then we've got the resilience part where we're really looking at not just, you know, resilience training and how we keep resilient, but it's also about our language and the way that we talk as a business as well. So really getting those messages across. So just to give you an example, you know, like, you know, I'm sometimes challenging some of our leaders with, we're always talking about what's going wrong. When do we talk about what's going right? Because we do a lot of things right, you know, and we often don't share that. We share what's gone wrong, but we don't share what's going right. So we've got a lot of work to do, I think, in that space, you know, really doing that. And then the next couple of pillars is around leader awareness, employee awareness, and then the external support. So if we're covering all of those things, then I think we're doing a great job. But are we sharing that? Not as much as I would like.
Okay, well, I'm loving what I'm hearing so far. So good work.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you just made then as well, Carolyn, something I've definitely seen traveling to my fair share of mine sites as well. And, you know, most meetings on mine sites, they'll have the safety share right at the beginning and people will talk about a near miss event or, you know, something that could have resulted in something quite serious.
Yeah.
And then they go into the meeting like that. Now, in positive psychology, we talk about how our brains have a negativity bias and we're kind of like, we'll be able to spot the negatives much more easier than we do the positives. And I think the safety share is probably just a way to reaffirm that negativity bias. Mm-hmm. And so what the task, and you're actually alluding to this, the intervention they often use to counter that is the what went well exercise. So deliberately focusing on the positive aspects of what has happened and not just the negative ones. And so I remember at one stage I was traveling from mine site to mine site and we're talking about some of these positive psychology things. I was like, look, you don't have to stop the safety shares. That's fine. But maybe follow it up with the what went well and, you know, discuss something that went well at a team level and really shout out, you know, who actually helped with that. And that helps not only with countering that negativity bias, but also some of that reward and recognition, not having a formal, you know, structure in place, but just, you know, taking time to think about, hey, we actually did this awesome job yesterday, or, you know, this person really demonstrated this teamwork or leadership or, you know, positive character trait really well. So, I'm all for that, you know, having the, you know, more of a focus on the positive and not just the safety shares.
That actually reminds me of an example of a It was a behavioural observation tool that was developed by the health and safety representatives on this site, but it was a positive behaviour observation tool. So it was if you saw somebody doing something proactive or protective in safety, you would actually write the story of what you'd seen. Then you'd go and discuss that with them and say, hey, well done, this is what I saw, and then you'd sort of submit it. And so the entire thing was about actually not going and doing a formal observation of somebody, but just noticing that somebody was being proactive, going in and giving them that positive feedback, and they sort of developed this this whole evidence base of all of these positive proactive safety interventions that were going on. So that was a really a different application of what we would typically see in a behavioral safety program, but it was really positive. Yeah,
Shell used to do that, and I imagine they still do that. And we used to get some really positive, you know, to start with. It was a little bit hard to get off the ground, but once we got people got into the mode of it, and it wasn't a, you know, not, I don't want to say a negative thing, but it was just something that people, you know, started to enjoy doing. It wasn't, it became not a chore. And you know, so then the morning meetings were the discussion around, yeah, well, this was good because of not, you know, still that stuff goes wrong, and we know stuff goes wrong, but yeah, how did you, what went right as well?
Yeah, I love it. So obviously Newcrest has a presence here in Western Australia, and Western Australia was the first to come out with a FIFO code of practice around mental health on the back of the parliamentary inquiry with the suicides that were occurring on remote mine sites. You've talked about some very mature things that Newcrest is doing as an organisation, but from your perspective of the mining industry in Australia and maybe even internationally, what would you say about the maturity of their approach to psychological health and safety?
So to be completely honest, I'm pretty nervous. So I think there needs to be that shift and that cultural shift to understanding that unless you move into that proactive space, and you know, and as I mentioned, those five pillars, then we're only ever going to be reacting. So I give the example to some of our management team around, we want to be three fences back from the cliff. You know, like, it's all very well to have services at the bottom of the cliff where we can pick people up and patch them up and support them to get well away, and that's lovely. And, you know, we're always going to, if the wheels fall off, we'll most certainly do what we can to support you. But unless you start thinking about, you know, things being a little bit further back and being proactive and looking at the business in itself and how you are for people and realising that people, you know, unless that whole culture of health is there, then you'll always be picking up the pieces, if you like, and that will always be a problem for your business. So, I think there's a long way to go.
So if we use your analogy, then you've got the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, you've got the fence on the cliff edge, you've got the next fence and the next fence. Where do you think the majority of the mining industry currently sits in relation to protecting against psychological injury?
Might be a weak fence at the top of the cliff.
Yeah.
Okay. If I'm really honest.
Yeah.
I'd like to fluff it up a bit and say, look, our industry is really doing well. And don't get me wrong, there are some businesses that are doing exceptionally well, and there's a lot going on in, you know, some of those bigger businesses. But, you know, some of the smaller businesses, they need some help. And, these sort of things that you guys are doing is really going to help with that.
Yeah, I really hope so. But I guess the reason that we came up in WA with a code of practice for FIFO and mental health specifically was that the mining industry was perceived not to be doing enough in that proactive space, as you call it. To what degree have you seen companies actually adopt that code of practice, though?
Uh, um, So, I mean, I've been focused on our business. And, you know, at the end of the day, I can't speak for a lot of the other businesses and what they're choosing to do. I don't really think that that's maybe my space to do that. But I know in our space that, you know, we've still got a long way to go. You know, let's be honest. And that it's there's got to be a starting point, and having where to start, and having somebody, you know, that's got the knowledge to actually understand where you need to start, and doing that audit, and really, and then knowing where the gaps are and start working through that. And you need that professional help.
Yeah, apologies for putting you on the spot there, Carolyn.
No, it's okay.
For the industry.
But I can't. I can't honestly say I can't talk about other businesses. It's not, I guess it's not really my place to do that.
No, we'll have to get an industry body on to talk about that perhaps. definitely from our perspective, we haven't seen it probably adopted enough. Hopefully, I mean, we're recording on June 9th. And the ISO 45003 standard for psychological health and safety at work came out yesterday, finally published. Hopefully that's another carrot for organisations to look to obtain adopt that standard. But they all say the same thing, right? Let's use a continuous improvement approach in order to understand our hazards and to mitigate them. Hopefully we see more companies doing that versus, you know, the fluffy kind of resilience corporate massage type stuff that we keep saying is not good enough. It is not going to prevent someone, you know, making
their way. I think it's really important that that businesses understand where they're at. You know, like it's good to have the guideline, and it's good to have the audit tool and where they're at, but actually hearing from your people and getting that information back around what is actually happening for you on our site and listening to that. We, on one of our sites, conducted quite a large audit or questionnaire where we asked, you know, specific mental health questions, but we also asked organisational factors questions. We had, you know, nearly 750 odd people reply to that questionnaire, and from that we needed to listen to those results, and that was part of our planning. So I think it's really important that businesses not only, you know, look at it from a legislation point of view and going through that, but getting the feedback from the people that are actually doing the work is really critical.
Yeah, you've actually spoken now about two really important things for this to work well. One is competence. So actually having someone who knows not just where the gaps are, but then how to start addressing it in a systematic way.
Yeah.
So that's really important. And if people can't in-house, I'm seeing more and more actually psych health and safety resources being appointed in companies, which is great.
Yeah.
I actually spoke to someone just last week who hopefully will come on our podcast soon, actually, who actually has a team for psych health and safety focused internally in this large Australian business. So interesting to see the resourcing happening in there, and it's so needed from a competence perspective. And the other thing you're talking about there was the consultation piece. It's all well and good for someone in HR or health and safety to go, yeah, we know what the issue is. We're going to start rolling out these interventions. But unless you actually get to the ground level and really find out the perception from employees about what really is going on and where should we be spending our time to improve things, then, you know, a lot of the time our interventions can miss the mark. So, two really critical things that you've mentioned there that hopefully our listeners picked up on.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, like you're talking a lot about mining, and when we did that survey, the things that came out were people are tired, and they want to be able to connect to home better.
Yeah.
And, you know, so why are they tired? You know, and for some of those rooms, you know, some of those areas, and it's all, you know, some of those have been fixed now. Around, you know, just not having air conditioning working in the room, and so not sleeping properly. So again, comes back to, you know, the basic needs that, you know, when we ask the personal mental health questions and how people have been doing over the last, you know, weeks to months, we didn't get any of the results that we were maybe anticipating. So, you know, we were anticipating, because there's so much discussion, and I'm not saying it's not happening in mining, around, you know, the mental health of mining workers and illness concerns, that we didn't see that at the site that we did our survey on.
Yeah, and this is the thing, right? So when we roll out interventions globally or across, you know, multiple sites or multiple companies, the interventions can miss the mark, because often the psych hazards are local to a working group or to a site or, you know, or to an organization. And so it's really important to get down to that level, right? Understand what is happening for people in different groups. And so as you found in your particular organization, or that particular mine site, the issues that you thought might be there, given the focus on mental health in mining, weren't there. But I'd say that, you know, not everyone is in as good a state from a culture perspective and a team fit perspective as what you had on that site.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, and I think a lot of it is just not really knowing where to start.
Mm.
I think I'd like to just highlight a couple of the, really what you talked about there is control measures for mental health. You talked about air conditioning. You talked about, you know, people being able to have contact with home. I think for a lot of organisations, when they think about mental health control measures, those aren't the kinds of things that they're thinking about. So I think the more that we can highlight, you know, what is a practicable control measure that you can put in place as a mining company, yeah, having rooms that are quiet enough that people can sleep in and that are, you know, air conditioned so that they're comfortable and that it's convenient for them to access home, those are all reasonably practicable things that you can do as an organization that are going to have a direct and immediate effect on people's mental health. Providing good food, good quality and volume of food, you know, those are all just basic things that we know have an impact on mental health. So, you know, it doesn't have to be rocket science.
It takes me back to the thirsty bullies
that
Karen Maher talked about. So it was a hydration issue, Carolyn, if you haven't listened to that episode yet, a hydration issue that was linked to these, you know, people being quite aggressive on site. And so when they addressed the hydration issue, the number of complaints around bullying harassment dropped as well. So often, yeah, you got to work out what the root cause of the problem is. And this is where continuous improvement comes in, right? Because you find out what is the low-hanging fruit. What are the first things that we should address? Yeah, people can't sleep well. Let's fix their sleep environment. People aren't, you know, nourished. Then let's make sure that they're getting the right food. Then we can start thinking about those higher order, if we start working up the pyramid, you know, the higher order needs that they need. But let's get the basic stuff sorted first, because that's the stuff we need to get right first. Yeah.
So, Carolyn, can you talk a bit more about occupational health nursing? So I guess we've heard from a lot of different professions on this podcast, and we like to explore the role that different professions can contribute to the psychological health and safety space. So can you tell us a bit about sort of what occupational health nurses can contribute to psych health and safety?
I'd like to say that we can contribute a lot, and we're often put in the back room to talk quietly to people, and we need to be more at the table. Quite frankly, we are, you know, it's and I'm not talking about Newcrest specifically, but I know that a lot of people in their nursing roles are in a clinic somewhere, and they're reacting to if there is a crisis situation. We're not just crisis situation people, we're actually more in the prevention space, and so we need to be at the table is what I'm trying to allude to there, is you know, make sure that if you've got a nurse on site, that they're involved with the planning. Make sure, you know, so the nurse role kind of sits, we kind of sit, well, we should sit in the middle, really, between health and safety and HR, because, you know, like we kind of sit on the peripheral of both of those functions within business. And if one of those parts of the function don't really understand what the nurse role can bring, or advisor role, then, you know, it's a bit of a waste of skill, if you like. So, I mean, there are, you know, nursing roles that are there to respond to emergencies. That's what they are there for. And then there's other roles that have more specific, you know, looking at a business point of view. So I'm just trying to say, I guess, that, you know, understand what the qualifications of the health professional that you have on your site and what they can bring, and don't just tar all nurses with the same brush, you know, like, you know, I mean, this isn't a you know, our own nurses in hospitals don't know necessarily what occupational health is. So we've got a lot of work to do to help businesses understand where occupational health actually plays a role, and that, you know, bring us out of the corner and let us have a say, because we can actually help businesses quite substantially, if you like. If it's not, you know, it doesn't need to be seen as a luxury. If you see it as more of that proactive prevention, and not just, you know, from a mental health point of view, but from a physical point of view as well. Preventing injuries is what we really want to do, not patch them up. And that's why we moved into occupational health, because it is about promotion at all levels, not just, yes, we can patch people up. We can, you know, and we're very good at rehabilitation as well. But that's what makes us unique from the health and safety role, for example, because we do have that knowledge. We've got that prevention knowledge, but we also have a good understanding. And when you're talking about the mental illness space, we also have a good understanding of what we need to do to support that person back into the workplace and understand medications and all of those sort of things to support that. I think I rambled on a bit there, sorry.
Okay. Do you have, I guess, some more practical examples that you can share of sort of how you or your team have worked to facilitate sort of a positive psych health and safety outcome?
I've got one example just around, you know, that maybe internal bias, if you like, around a manager on one of our sites phoned me recently and said, you know, we've got this this guy and he's just started working for us and he's come and told me that he takes Valium. I can't have him on my site. And I said, why? You know, like, I was bamboozled. Why wouldn't you want this person on your site? And, you know, and he said, well, they take Valium. And I said, yeah, but how often do they take Valium? And what do they take the Valium for? And what, you know, what are their triggers? And I didn't ask any of those questions. I just thought that it was because they were taking that medication that they would be a risk to the business, so we couldn't have them on our site. And it's like, no, we need to understand, you know, like, do they maybe only take Valium when they, you know, when they really can't sleep? Or what is it, because they've been triggered at work with their anxiety? What is it? And once we understand those things, let's manage that in a better space. But what worries me is that person would potentially was going to be told that, you know, we can't have you on our site. And that's just pure not understanding that. And that's someone that was in quite a senior role. So, you know, that sort of thing, we can help with that and help, you know, once we know what the person's taking that medication for and all those sort of things, then we can have a little bit more of a better conversation. Yeah, so does that give you a good example? Yeah,
that is a good example. Thank you. And I think that really highlights as well the role of having a really competent on-site medic to sort of support that function as well, that your staff can go to and actually talk about the medications that they're taking, and then, you know, the medic actually has that evidence-informed background and training to be able to yeah, sort of make a better determination about fitness for work and whether, you know, alternate duties are required and all of that sort of thing. Where, yeah, for a supervisor who's just got a construction background and they've come up through a trade, they're not going to have that understanding. So, yeah, I mean, I've had similar conversations with managers who have been concerned that their staff are taking diazepam. I'm like, well, it just helps them sleep and it's out of their system by the time they wake up in the morning. So what's the problem?
Yeah, that's right. So, I guess having a different view, and seeing that as a better support function in the business, more than we patch people up.
Yeah, I like that idea of you coaching from a space of expertise in this health range, because obviously line managers we keep talking about aren't expected to be health experts and not expected to be psychologists.
No.
But they have those, hopefully they have that expertise in-house that they can refer to, if not, you know, referring to treating practitioners or whatever. I like that point as well around, I think sometimes people are perceived as being the risk. This person has depression, they're a risk. This person takes Valium, they're a risk. Whereas if we actually go, well, what is the risk here? Well, the risk is not appropriately managing the medication use or not appropriately managing the mental illness. That potentially could bring risk. That's the risk, not the individual.
Because that's what happens. People get afraid and they worry about the drug and alcohol test, and so they don't take their medication and those sort of things. And that's, you know, I keep coming back to that culture of health. And if we're a culture of health, we're really caring about people, then those are the sort of things that we manage, we don't ignore or you know, treat it as a this is too high risk for our business type stuff.
Yeah, it'd be just great to move away from the whole that person is a risk though to like thinking about the specific behaviours or, you know, characteristics that contribute to the risk and treat that as a risk, and then we can manage that risk rather than just going the whole person is a risk and we need to remove them. We need to eliminate them from this.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot about, I think, transparency of those sort of policies and processes within the organisation as well to reduce, you know, where those policies are in place, that, yeah, we're going to think about this as, you know, we'll look at the medication and we'll look at what adjustments we need to make. If we're, you know, communicating that really well in the organisation and being quite open with people that that's the process that we follow, then you get more willingness for people to actually engage and come forward and sort of collaborate with the organisation in that area rather than trying to hide it. So, having the stuff in place is important, but being really transparent about it and communicating it frequently as well, I think is a really important piece of that puzzle.
I think that safety and security, people need to feel safe. And if they don't feel safe, then they're never going to tell you what's really going on. And that's a bigger risk than anything.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. Like you said, Jason.
So, Carolyn, you've mentioned obviously Newcrest is on a journey themselves. It sounds like you're doing some great things. Obviously, your career spans the last couple of decades, and so you've seen a lot from, like you said, even back, you know, 20 years ago, there was discussion around workplace mental health. So you've obviously seen it for the last couple of decades. Yeah. Seeing where it's moving now, you know, what are your hopes for the future of workplace mental health?
It's an exciting time, and I so wish, you know, this is what we've been working for and we've been trying for so long. And so I think this is a really good period that we're going to see a great shift in this space. There's been the token gesture to awareness, I think, and now that we've got, more things like the ISO 45003 and those sort of things, really, you know, I think that a lot of businesses have just been a bit lost. There's, you know, mature businesses with that real culture of health, like, you know, working for the Shells of the world and those sort of things, that have put the effort into their people because they understand that, you know, when people are healthy and happy, they actually are more productive and you'll actually get a better business outcome. You know, they put a lot of focus into that and retaining people. And so that's been, you know, part of that journey on my journey. You know, it's been that was a really, really, really cool experience to work in a business like that. And bringing other businesses along. I think that these things that are happening now are just such an exciting time. But use the right health professional, use the right, you know, whether that's a psychologist or your rock health nurse or your advisor or whatever it is, but use the right professionals.
Yeah, no, wise words.
Absolutely. Do you have some words of advice that you'd like to share for professionals who'd like to work in the psych health and safety field?
Are you resilient? No. This is an exciting time, and there is a lot of businesses that are now getting it, and so there is a lot of opportunity to help businesses understand what they can do in this space, and like I say, it's working with across the health and safety generalist and the HR professional. You need to see that these are three roles that are quite pertinent to be working together across the board, not as separate siloed entities. And so somebody moving into a role like this, you know, there's a lot of experience and you know, take some of those lessons that have been learnt. Don't try and reinvent the wheel, because there's a lot of it, there's a lot of knowledge out there, but there's also some really good research papers to really make sure that you understand how good work is really important for the sociology of our society, if you like, and really making sure that we, you know, have a good part to play in that.
Excellent advice. Thank you.
Yeah. And hopefully, yeah, people don't have to be as patient or resilient as what you've had to be over the last 20 years, Carolyn. Hopefully start to see some change happening a bit quicker now.
We stand on the shoulders of those who've gone before us.
That's right. The very resilient.
That's right.
Before us, yes. Well, look, that's been a fantastic discussion, Carolyn. Thank you so much for coming on. And also big thanks to Newcrest for allowing you to come on. I think actually thinking back over the last 30 or so episodes, I think you may be the first internal person potentially that we've had. We've had consultants, academics, people who've worked on standards, regulators. Joelle's trying to think at the moment. I don't think we have. So hopefully, yeah, this might inspire some other organisations to put forward someone to talk about, you know, what they're doing from a psych health and safety space. It'd be great to be able to share some practical examples from industry people and not just people consulting to industry.
Yep. So more than happy to talk and share. You know, it doesn't have to be a secret. We can all learn from each other. And that, I think that's a really important piece as well, is that, you know, there's a lot of kind of hiding what, you know, businesses are doing, and I'm not about that at all. I think it's really important that we share and learn from those learning opportunities, so that you can get things off the ground and really understand what you can do in your business.
Yeah, and we're happy for our podcast to be a platform where all these great companies talk about.
Well, that's right.
That's fantastic. No, Carolyn, thank you so much. I hope everyone gets as much out of this episode as what we did. But that brings us to the end of the episode. So don't forget, we do video these over Zoom. So if you want to watch the video rather than listen to the podcast, you can catch that on the Flourish DX YouTube channel. Also, if you prefer shorter clips rather than the long format podcasts, we do, as Carolyn was mentioning, on LinkedIn, post little 2 to 4 minute nuggets of gold on the Flourish DX LinkedIn page. Joelle and I are very active on LinkedIn, probably more active. I know Carolyn's starting to get into LinkedIn a little bit more now, but Joelle and I are very active on there. So feel free to reach out to us as well, and we will be happy to connect and continue the conversation online. But that's it for today's episode, listeners. We will catch you next time.
You've been listening to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast. To stay up to date with the latest on psychological injury prevention, follow Flourish DX on LinkedIn and subscribe to the Psych Health and Safety Podcast at www.psychhealthandsafety.com.